We'll dive in Ma'ariv Bezrat Hashem after the shir. Tonight's shir is going to focus primarily on two major topics in Taras Mishpacha, the Harchakros and Bestos. The rest of Hilchos Nida from last week's shir should be available on yutorah.org for those that want to review, those that missed it. And for the most part, last week's shir, this week's shir, although both centering around Hilchos Nida, are not interrelated. There was once a man who went to the Grand Canyon and saw the gorgeous view. He couldn't believe it. Eighth wonder of the world. Went up right to the edge, take pictures, looking down of the walls of the Grand Canyon, the sides. He brought them home, made them to slides to show his family, to show his friends. Everyone was wowed at the gorgeous pictures of the Grand Canyon. A few years later, he went back and committed himself to getting even better and more scenic pictures than he got originally. So he's walking with his camera, taking pictures, and all of a sudden, he bumped into something. He realized that a wall was erected, a gate, near the edge of where he was walking. And in outrage, he went to the park ranger and said, "Ranger, I don't understand. What's this gate doing here? Don't you know you can't go up to the edge to take pictures? You have a gate there?" And the ranger said, "Oh, I'm sorry. That gate's there to make sure people don't fall off." And he responded, "People don't fall off. I was here a few years ago. I took gorgeous pictures, and I didn't fall off." And the ranger smiled and said, "The gate wasn't made for you, it was made because there are those that did." Many din and rabbanon that exist can sometimes be perplexing. We might feel that we can withstand the din d'oraisa, the temptation, the urge to commit an aveira, to violate one of the Torah's commandments, doesn't apply to us. We don't need din and rabbanon. We don't need siyagim. We don't need gates around the edge to make sure that we don't commit chas v'shalom an aveira min haTorah. And there are various approaches to these dinim. First of all, we never know al tamim ba'atzmecha ad yom osva. Never trust yourself. But aside from that, gzeiros are often made for the tzibur. They're not made for any one given person that might fall in or might not fall in. They're made for the entire tzibur to protect the greater good. And the same applies to the harchakros. So din and rabbanon that Chazal added in order to make a safeguard to Klal Yisrael to make sure they keep Hilchos Nida. A person might feel that he or she doesn't need those harchakros. They would be fine keeping the din d'oraisa. It might be true, but harchakros are made for the tzibur, not for any given yachid. Furthermore, in sexuality specifically, we have a klal that Mara tells us in several places, ein apotropos l'arayos. No matter what, if there's a man who is in solitary confinement, there's a woman in another place in solitary confinement, one of them is the husband, the other one is the wife, and the woman is pregnant, we don't presume that's an impossibility. We don't view some immaculate conception as having happened. There's a will, there's a way. Who's the father of that baby? The father that's married to the mother, even if, according to all intents and purposes, the way we would examine it, it's impossible for them to cohabit. Ein apotropos l'arayos. There's never such a thing as a good enough watchman when it comes to sexuality, to arayos. With this in mind as well, even if a person thinks, "Come on, I don't need that chatos." Ein apotropos l'arayos. You never know al tamin ba'atzmacha. And that's why their chatos, even if they might seem severe at sometimes, are important to revere, firstly for ourselves. We never know how we would withstand the test, but not only for ourselves, for the Tzibur, for the Grand Canyon as well. There are several harachotos that the Gemara tells us, codified in Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Tzadi Hei, that exist when a woman is in Nida. The first, the most basic one, is physical contact is prohibited. No touching. Not only no physical touching, even by means of another object. Husband can't wear gloves. Wife can't wear gloves. They can't touch each other, even though there's no actual physical contact. A back scratcher, a stick. A husband is not allowed to touch his wife, even though they've ever had there, even though it's not literally one touching the other. There's a group of harchatos that center around meals and mealtime, center around food. Where Forrest points out in his beautiful two-volume sefer, the Green Art School sefer, Halachas of Nida, that unfortunately in a day of fast food and eating on the go, we don't appreciate what a meal is supposed to be. Meals often to be a time people sit down, converse, relax. And to that end, the Chazal decided that meals should be more intimate, and for that reason alone, more than any other time, it's important to have a whole separate section of our harchatos that deal with food and meals. Firstly, during a mealtime, it's important for a husband and wife to eat as a person eating milk and meat at the same table, either on different tables or with placemats, with some sort of separation. We presume this is true whether there are others around in the same room or not, whether it's totally private or the meal itself is private. Either way, it's necessary for the husband and wife to have some sort of hecker, placemats, something which is not being used, an apple juice container if you're not drinking from apple juice, something which is not being used during the meal as a separation between the husband and the wife. If there are others eating at the table, we presume you don't need to have harchatos. So if it's the husband and wife and kids, husband and wife and parents, there's no need to have harchatos, any harchatos during the meal. But if it's the husband and wife alone eating at the table, even if there are parents, there are in-laws, there are kids around in the room at the time, it's still necessary to have harchatos on the table, and that could be, again, could be placemats, could be anything which is not an integral part of the meal, even though it could be, is okay. For example, if people are drinking Coke, then, as I mentioned, the apple juice container can be a harchatos. People don't really know about it. That itself is going to be a harchatos if they don't use the apple juice container during the meal. What if they get thirsty and they want to use the apple juice? They have to make something else in the harchatos. You can't have something used as a hecker. But as long as it's something which is not used, even if it doesn't look strange on the table, that's a hecker sufficient for keeping the harchatos between husband and wife during the time of nidos. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that there are two parts to serving that cannot be done directly by a wife to her husband, then the Shulchan Aruch adds by husband to a wife as well. A wife is not allowed to pour her husband a drink or to serve the drink in front of him. That is, if she pours a drink of tea in the kitchen, even though he knows she's doing it, that's okay. If she serves it right to him on his plate but he's not there, that's also okay. But to serve in front of him or to pour it in front of him is the problem. And according to the Shulchan Aruch, it only applies with beverages. So again, either to pour it in front of him or to serve it in front of him is a problem. The way she rectifies it is by using a shinui. Whether she serves it with her left hand, pours it with her left hand, or she does a shalom b'fanov. If she blocks his vision of her pouring the tea with her body, so even though he sees that she's on the other side of the room doing something, but he can't see what she's doing, even though he knows that she's pouring, that's okay. If she serves, if she serves a platter, which is a serving platter, even if she puts it down in front of him, that's not a problem because she's not serving him directly. But if she serves him his own drink, then that itself is a problem whether he sees the pouring or just the servant. And according to the Shulchan Aruch, it only applies to beverages. However, the Bach quotes one of the earlier Achronim that suggests that it's not only din in beverages, it applies to foods as well. A wife is not allowed to do French service, to give her husband chicken, curdle, and shalant on his plate in the kitchen. If he sees that she's doing it, she can't serve it to him. She can't, that's the equivalent of pouring. Or she can't bring him that plate and put it down right in front of him. If she puts it down, not directly in front of him, in a place which is not normal, or she does it with her left hand, or she doesn't do French service. Rather, she pours, she brings out a whole platter. That's okay. But if there's no shinui, if it's directly in front of him and its own plate, that's a problem. Says the Bach, not only for drinks, even for food. But there's a machlokes hapostum halacha l'maaseh, how we passed him. Rav Avadia Yosef writes in his beautiful Sefer Taras Habayis that he thinks, if you look carefully in the Bach, it's really a misquote. The only prohibition that we have for a wife serving a husband is for drinks. There's no problem for food at all. And this is the way Rabbi Willard Pastin's halacha maisa. However, many are makbid on food as well as drinks. So as we mentioned last week, the bittasi of Sodom Hilchas Nida is ask. Ask whoever usually has shaylos to what to do halacha maisa. That's machlokas on the books. The Shulchan Aruch says it applies only to drinks. The Shach quotes in the Bach from the earlier Achronim Arash Ashtreich to say it even applies to food. And machlokas halacha maisa, how do we pass this? Only food? Is it only drinks or even food as well? But despite the Shulchan Aruch only saying one part of the story, the Shach adds we presume it applies to only pouring or serving in the kitchen, or only serving in front of him. One or the other should be avoided. You don't need both to make it a prohibition. If she does it, if she makes the portion ready in front of him in the kitchen, or she serves it in front of him, let's say they're in the dining room, either way, that it both should be avoided, one or the other. The Shulchan Aruch also says the same thing should apply to a husband. Not only should a wife not do this for her husband, a husband should not do these things for his wife as well. And the same halachas would apply. Does it apply to only food, only drinks, or even to food? Whatever you presume by the first halachas will apply here as well. When we reverse it, for a husband not to do it to his wife, the same halachas would apply. Is it foods as well as drinks? We presume that wine has a unique form of endearment. It's an alcoholic beverage. It's supposed to even write grape juice, even though it's not technically alcoholic. Still, it's a special type of beverage which draws more of a romantic environment. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch writes, it's a special arachatra. A husband is not allowed to send his wife a cup of wine directly. Send means even if she's sitting on the other side of the table, and they have a long table full of guests, 10 people at the table, he's at one head, she's at the other head, he's not allowed to send her a cup of wine if it's earmarked directly for her. Of course, this is most problematic one day a week, Shabbos Kodesh. If the husband would drink some of the Kiddush, then pour off into his kos for her, or even send his kos directly to her, that's a violation of the Din of Shulchan Aruch. He's not allowed to send her a kos of Yayin. So what do we do for Kiddush? We have several different options. Ironically, the halacha is, as we're going to see in a minute, although a husband is not allowed to drink his wife's leftovers, a wife is allowed to drink her husband's leftovers, or eat her husband's leftovers. So the simplest thing to do, and this is what I usually advise people to do during the entire month, whether there is a situation of nidus or not, is if the husband and wife sit next to each other, for the husband to have his kos between him and his wife before Kiddush starts, pick up the kos, make Kiddush on it, drink, then put it back where it started from. Then the wife is allowed to pick it up and drink. And there is no shlichus. He was not sholech teretos shabracha. Nothing was sent. If it wasn't sent, there's nothing wrong. Since she's allowed to drink from his leftovers, and he put it back down to where it started from, nothing was sent, there's nothing to talk about. And I think that's the best thing to do the entire month, because this way no one knows what's going on in one's own private life. However, what if the wife sits on the other side of the table? That's not going to work. He has to send it to her. So then we have the sanitary approach and the non-sanitary approach. The non-sanitary approach is if he drinks from his own cup, then gives it to everyone in the family to drink along the way, he's not sending her a kosher bracha because they're all drinking from that same kos, not only she, not only her. Not so sanitary, not so in vogue nowadays. So the next approach is if he drinks from the kos and then pours from his kos into a few different cups and puts it on a plate. It's a very common phenomenon. We have it all the time in Shabbos tables. You pour into little glasses and you send that around, there's no one coast which is earmarked for her, that's okay. Each desk will take, and then she'll eventually get one. Or alternatively, what people do is sometimes the husband drinks from the kosher bracha, and he already has a lot of kosher that are poured either before Tiddush or after Tiddush in front of him. That's also okay, because he's not sending her a kosher directly, she's just waiting her turn with everyone else. All those are ways of circumventing this halacha. Vayishach al-kos, he's not able to send her a kosher specifically of yayin. Any other beverage is mutter. Only yayin is a problem. And also, the opposite is okay. If she wants to send him a kosher, Shulchan Aruch does not prohibit that. Here it's only one way, only for the husband to send it as a form of endearment to his wife. We'll hold up on the questions till the end, just to make sure we can go through all the discussions we have. Then we'll have time for questions at the end of the session. Chazal also told us a husband is not allowed to eat his wife's leftovers. Yet there's three caveats that Shulchan Aruch tells us. There are three ways of saying that it's permissible for a husband to eat his wife's leftovers. Number one, if he changes the food to a different plate, that's permissible. If husband and wife are out to eat in the restaurant and they order steak and french fries, and the wife decides after going through half the steak, she's not hungry anymore, you're allowed to take the steak, put it on another plate, and eat that steak. There are several chiddushim of Moshe Feinstein, both L'kula and L'chumra, in this area. I'm not mentioning those, just know they exist, but the Pasha Pshat in Shulchan Aruch is not like Rav Moshe Feinstein writes. Rav Moshe has certain kulas and certain chumras, which I am leaving out. But the standard approach is that if a person has a steak, or a person even has soup, the wife orders soup and the wife is full after half the soup is over, he's allowed to take the soup, pour it into another bowl, and eat the rest of the soup. You can eat the leftovers if it's changed into another plate. The Shulchan Aruch also tells us something which is not so in vogue nowadays, except with families that have kids. If someone else eats between them, the wife eats her soup, then they give it to one of their kids to eat a little bit, and then the husband wants to eat, that's okay. Depends on how squeamish a family is, but halachically speaking, that's something which is permissible as far as hachatos are concerned. Alternatively, if she leaves and she's not there anymore, that's also okay. So if the wife orders soup, and the husband wants to finish his wife's soup, the wife gets up and goes to the bathroom in the restaurant, husband's allowed to finish the soup. Halacha, the Shulchan Aruch even tells us that if she comes back, once he started, he's allowed to continue. So, in theory, the wife can go to the bathroom for a minute, husband can start eating, then even if she comes back, that's no longer intimate, that's still considered leftovers, that's permissible for him to eat, even if it's in the exact same bowl, no one ate between the two of them. Leaving the harchatos that apply to meals, another group of harchatos that we have applies to beds and chairs. One of the most well-known halakos in today's day and age, Hilchos Nida, is the halakha that husband and wife are not allowed to be in the same bed, even fully clothed, when a woman is in Nida. The Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara and the Rishonim, tells us that even if a person would have a bed as big as this room, there would be a huge bed. The husband can't be on that part of the room, of the bed, and the wife on that part. As long as it's one bed, it's a problem. Based upon that, even two beds, which are connected, such as by a headboard, are a problem, because that's really all one cheftza. Even though technically one bed is one, another bed is another, if they're connected, that's no better than a huge bed, which spans the whole length of the room. Similarly, if there are two beds, that when both husband and the wife are in the beds, the bedspreads, or the quilts, or the blankets, are going to touch each other, even though technically the two beds are not connected, that's also considered one bed, and that's still a problem. If the beds are made and they're put together, that's totally fine. But if when they're sleeping in the beds, any parts of the beds touch, that's still considered an extension of one bed. That is not permitted during the time of Nidus. Furthermore, what if they're in the middle of Eretz Yisrael? It's the summer. It's very hot. There's no covers, no blankets, so they move the beds away an inch. Nothing's touching, is that okay? So we presume also that if, in theory, it's possible for one of them to roll over in the middle of the night into the other, even if technically they're not touching, that's also a problem. They should do what some people like calling the roll test. If you couldn't roll from one to another, then it's okay. If you could roll from one to another without falling between the crack between the beds, that itself is a problem. That's the bare minimum. Some people prefer to have a night table between the beds. We presume that's not necessarily halacha maisa. Some people like it because it keeps the uniformity throughout the room for the entire month. But strictly speaking, that is not something which we presume is necessary for halacha. The next halacha, as far as beds is concerned, is sitting on beds. He is not allowed to sit on her bed, whether she's home or not, as long as she's in the city. If they live in Washington Heights, she works in Midtown, and he wants to take a nap during the day. He wants to sit on the bed to put on his shoes during the day. He's not allowed to lie or even sit on her bed as long as she's in the city. What if she travels to Virginia? She's out of town. Then he's allowed, in theory, to lie in her bed or to sit on her bed. But if she's in the ear, even if she's not home, he's not allowed to do that. However, for her, we have a slightly different harchaka. She is not allowed to sit on his bed or lie in it, befanav. But if a woman is married to a doctor, and at night he's in residency, he's not home the whole night, she's allowed to sit or sleep in his bed as long as he's not home. What if he's a resident in the hospital next door? Still irrelevant. Even if he's in the same ear, as long as it's not the fun of, as long as he's not home, he's not going to see it, then that's okay. So for a wife, we're much more mater than a husband. A husband is not allowed to sit in his wife's bed or lie in it as long as the wife's in the city, but a wife is not allowed to sit or lie on her husband's bed the fun of if he is there, if she can see it. She is not supposed to make his bed the fun of. This is the discussion the Achronim have as far as which part of the bed is considered making it. The sheets, the pillowcases, the quilts, the bedspread. So we presume it's better for her not to make it the fun of altogether. So the Achronim have a discussion which part is really considered making it. But that's only the fun of. If he turns away, even if he's right there and he knows what's going on, he just doesn't see it directly, that's okay. That's not considered the fun of. She's allowed to make her shalom the fun of. But of course, for shalom bayis, it's always better for the husband to make the beds anyway. All of them. Any bench that moves, when one of them sits on it, cannot be used for both of them to sit on together. Unless it's connected to the ground. If they go to Fort Tryon Park and they both sit on a bench, but the bench is connected to the ground, it's not going to move, they can sit right next to each other on that bench as long as they're not touching each other. The first halacha, they can't touch each other. But if they are sitting on something which is going to move, then he or she cannot feel each other's weight. For example, what if they have a couch? They are not allowed to sit on the same cushion, even if it's a very big cushion on the couch, it's the same cushion. When you sit there on one, you feel the other part of the cushion move, that's not okay. But on a couch, what if it's two cushions, that's okay. What about the fact that if it's a nice couch, sit on this cushion, and that cushion moves this cushion, which moves them, that's already too far, we presume that's okay. As long as it's two cushions, it's fine, but one cushion is a problem. What about a nice swing? It's hard to think of swings in the winter. But in the summer, they want to go to the park, they want to use one of these big swings that adults can sit on two at a time. Even if they don't touch each other, that's a problem, since it's moving. Each one of them is moving, you feel the other person's weight. However, for all these situations, if someone is between them, then it's mutter. So if they're sitting on the couch, but there's a baby or a child between them, even if it's the same cushion, or they're on the swing, husband, child, wife, that's permissible, even if you feel one another's weight, that's still okay because there's someone that's in between them. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very important kula which deals with Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law, husband and wife come to a chasana. On the way home from the chasana, husband sits in the front, he drives, wife sits next to him, and another couple asks for a ride. They'd rather give the other couple a ride. The other couple says, okay, it's them two in the front, two of us in the back, that's fine. As they're about to leave, Mr. Murphy comes, fifth person comes and wants to sit in the back as well. So we have two men, one woman in the back. What do you do? Ordinarily, it's not a problem. Man, husband, wife. But what if the wife is Anita? So husband's not supposed to really be touching his wife. So if you have a compact car, and you have man, husband, wife, that's really not appropriate. Rav Moshe writes, not only is there a problem of Medea, Rav Moshe talks about the problem of what if when the car moves, so then the husband and the wife are sitting on the same couch, they're going to be feeling each other's movements. So Rav Moshe writes, don't worry, that's okay, because if you're in a car, what's really moving is the car. It's not one another's body weight. So Rav Moshe writes, it's mutter to have a man next to his wife, even if they're squished in a car, that's not considered a problem of one of them making the other move. It's really the car moving, not each other moving. It's advisable for them to both try not to touch each other and to have a pocketbook, some sort of something else which is going to be separating between the two of them, so they're not actually touching. So if they're both up against the pocketbook, they're not touching. But at least, if Moshe writes, there's no concern about the fact that one is moving and making the other move. The next halacha that Shulchan Aruch tells us in the Kufsa Dihei is that a husband is not allowed to stare at any part of his wife's body that's normally covered. Ravadi writes in his Sefer Taras Abayis that we have two different terms in halacha for seeing something. Ri'iyah and histakus. Ri'iyah means to see. Histakel means to stare. And Ravadi writes that the Shulchan Aruch tells us, well, yistakel, he's not allowed to stare at any place which is covered. It doesn't say you can't look. Meaning, if a place is normally covered, husband and wife are both getting dressed in the same room, and out of the corner of his eye he happens to see a part of her body that's normally covered, Ravadi writes that's not a problem. Since he's not staring at it, he's not focusing on it, that's okay. There's not a problem of ri'iyah, there's only a problem of histakus, of staring. He's not allowed to stare at any part of her body which is normally covered. There's a general machlokas between some of the postmen in Israel and some of the postmen in America. What the halacha is with a woman's hair during nidus? Is hair a part of the body that's normally covered or not? Rav Moshe writes in several tshuvas that we presume that there's no problem with keeping one's hair uncovered when a woman is in nida, because that's not a part of hair that's part of the body that's normally covered. That's a part of the body that's normally covered outside because it's nidus. But it's not intrinsically a part of the body that's normally covered when she's at home. So Rav Moshe tells us a very important yisod. What's normally covered does not mean what's covered when she's outside. What's normally covered means what's covered when she's in the comfort of her home. And in a similar vein, Rav Willard postulates that a woman only needs to cover during the time of nidus what she would cover when she's normally at home. If a woman normally walks around in her apartment in short sleeves, a t-shirt, and shorts, there's no problem for her to wear that during nidus as well. Aye, that's not sanua, she couldn't wear that outside. But there are two different halachos. Being sanua outside means covering any part of her body which is either subjectively or objectively erva. Being sanua inside during nidus does not mean covering what's normally covered outside. All it means is that he's not allowed to stare at a part of her body that's normally covered. But if she normally wears something which is not as tanua for outside, inside, as long as that's part of a normal wardrobe, that's permissible during nidus as well. Where does that stop? What if she wants to wear a tank top? Can she wear a tank top during nidus? What if she wears a tank top the rest of the month? Maybe she should wear it during nidus as well. So Rav Willard points out, it depends. We have two different categories in halacha. There are two parts of the body as far as this halacha is concerned. There's body and extremities. The torso, the actual trunk of a person, is considered a person's body. And there, if a person would wear a tank top, which would have a low neck, would be sleeveless, that's a problem, even inside the house when she's in nida. She might wear it every night, that's her pajamas, irrelevant. That's objectively a problem during nidus. It's only with the extremities, arms, and legs. If she wears something, short sleeves, cap sleeves, which would go higher than her elbow, even though she wouldn't wear that outside normally, since she wears it every night when she's at home, that's okay even during nidus as well. But it only applies to extremities, not to the actual part of the body itself. Beyond this scope of our discussion, there are certain kulas that apply whether the husband or the wife is a chola or a chola, and it's important to know if there's a situation in which some rachatos might not be able to be observed, to ask the shayla, ask, to discuss these issues, if it is nodeya. The Shulchan Aruch also tells us that we have a chumrah from Rashi. Rashi, according to the Machzor Vitri, did not pass a key to his wife when his wife was in nida. And therefore, Shulchan Aruch tells us, even though it's not mentioned in the Gemara anywhere, that a husband is not allowed to pass anything to his wife or vice versa when she's in nida. There's a discussion in the Achronim, and we presume that even throwing is a problem. He can't throw it up, even though he's not passing, he can't throw up, let her attach it. because that's still considered passing. However, if we're with Pashtuns, although this is also a discussion, if there's also a machokas achronim, what's the halacha if she has something which is connected to her? Let's say an apron or a pocketbook. If she has a pocketbook which is connected to her, can he put something into the pocketbook? That's not her hand, that's an extension. It's also machokos. So Will thinks if you combine two machokos, then you have a clue of halacha maisa. If, since there's machokos with halachas with the pocketbook, number one. And there's also machokos if you're allowed to throw it, even though each one of those alone is not okay, if you throw something into the pocketbook, that's okay. If you throw keys into the pocketbook, since you're combining two things, it's throwing, and it's not connected to them directly, that's okay. And there, Rav Wolf says, that's why pocketbooks were created. They're created to help get rid of problems of Hoshata when a woman is in either. That's why it's so involved to wear pocketbooks, big pocketbooks, small pocketbooks, in order to circumvent this halacha, he's allowed to throw something into her pocketbook. Included in Hoshata is carrying one big object, even though that's not directly passing with something from one hand, from his hand to her hand, or the other way around. For them to both pick up the shtender would be a problem if they need to carry it together, because that itself, both using their energies to hold one thing, is the same as giving something from his hand to her hand. There's two, the Achronim write two different reasons that we say that Hoshata is prohibited. Number one is because we're concerned, it's chiba in general, to do something from his hand to her hand, do something miyad liyad is chiba. Or number two, we're concerned that they might touch. Either way, we presume both apply. If one or the other applies, it's a problem. What if a person is moving? Ravadi happens to be maker. Ravadi has a kula, he says, if two people carry a couch, husband and wife carry a couch, that is not derech chiba. That's derech movers. He doesn't use that lashon. Ravadi, there are those that are maitel, so it's important to know if there's a situation where it's hard to keep this harchata. There's something which is very long and two people are carrying it, test the shayla, but the pashtus we presume that even something which is big, and even if they're carrying it, is still considered a problem. Rav Wolf has a big kula, which he's a das yachid in, regarding children, regarding babies. Rav Wolf says anything regarding babies, babies themselves, baby bottles, baby diapers, baby formula, anything regarding babies, infants, there's no problem of Hoshata. A husband is allowed to pass his wife a baby directly, pass a bottle directly, pass formula directly. When we talk about little babies, babies that are a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months old, little babies is mutter. Others disagree, and in this matter as well, it's important to have the ability to ask. It's nodiaya by a bris. What if a husband and wife want to be a kvater and a kvater, and they want to both bring in the baby? So to be a kvater, the wife brings the baby in as his nushim, and then the husband meets her with his nushim and takes it to the bris. Is that okay? What if she's a nida? So according to Rav Wolf, there's no problem. It's a baby. Baby itself, you're allowed to pass from one to another. Others are matel sometimes if you have two pillows. The baby's on one pillow, so the wife carries the second pillow, and then the husband takes the baby from the first pillow. He's not taking it from the wife's hand directly. He's taking it from a pillow on top of another pillow. That's already okay. That's already considered a zayvait. It's so far that it's not considered a violation of sarchotra. It's important to know that you can ask shayla in such a situation. Don't presume it's always a problem. Yesh v'yesh in the situation of being a tractor. Kalos rosh. The Shulchan Aruch says, lo yekel roshima. Husband's not allowed to be mekel rosh. He can't be frivolous with his wife because we presume. Schok and Kalos Rosh Margilan is Adam Erva. It can cause a person to be, unfortunately, act inappropriately. This does not mean a husband cannot play a game with his wife. We presume that as much as it's necessary for husband and wife to date, not only when they're engaged, when they're not husband and wife, but when they're married, spend time with one another, whether it's inside their home, out to their home, in a relaxed environment, it's important for them to spend time with one another with nothing else going on. It's even more important during nidus. Sometimes women complain, they feel that their husband pays more attention to them when they're tahora than when they're tameya, and that's inappropriate. Often husbands don't mean to be doing it. Sometimes the husbands just are trying to temper themselves and to realize, I shouldn't be meitel rosh, I shouldn't be too frivolous, but there's a difference between being frivolous, being having kalos rosh, and being cordial and being normal. It's important to bond and to keep the relationship alive even during the time of nidus. Dating is encouraged, board games, talking, schmoozing, that's not kalos rosh, that's normal part of marriage. Kalos rosh means more of a frivolous type of behavior which should be marginal to adam la'erva. What about saying I love you? The machlokas we know in general, is it appropriate for chasan and kala when they're engaged to say I love you? We presume in today's day and age, the words I love you don't mean that much. Many chasanim say to their talis when they're engaged. Unfortunately, I love you is said in songs all the time, it's said anywhere. It doesn't really mean what it used to mean. And the same thing is true to an extent when a husband and wife are during the time of nidus. There's a difference between the words I love you being said when a husband's running out the door, I love you, I'll speak to you later, which is not talis rosh, and 10 o'clock at night when everyone's asleep and they sit down to a candlelight dinner with wine, and he takes off his glasses, looks into her eyes and says, I love you. Big difference. Three words. I love you means something different in that situation than in the first situation. So it's often not the words I love you that are problematic, but the entire situation. Is it talis rosh or not? Hachacham einav baroshu. It's important sometimes to say I love you, even during nidus. A wife shouldn't think, chas v'shalom, that his husband is only involved with her sexually, not emotionally. He can't connect with her when she is not tahora. So I love you is definitely encouraged in a situation where it's not going to be viewed as something which is inappropriate. A wife is not allowed to draw the bath, to actually turn on the bath for her husband. Does that apply to a shower? It doesn't apply to a shower. She can turn on the shower. Let's say sometimes in Washington Heights where the plumbing is 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years old, it sometimes takes time for the boiler to heat up the water and make the water get up all the way to a person's shower. So what if husband's still sleeping, his wife gets up, he says, can you do me a favor, turn on the shower for me? I want it to get hot. That's okay. She's allowed to turn on the shower for him, but she's not allowed to draw the bath for him. She can't draw a bath and make that water start. That's kir of das, which is inappropriate. For Moshe, it's a famous kula, a famous chumrah in the tshuva. What if husband and wife are in a situation where it's imperative for the husband to give the wife something, but it's a violation of the din of hashata? He can't give her something directly. So the shul asked Rav Moshe, isn't the wife or the husband going to feel embarrassed? She doesn't want him knowing. She doesn't want the rest of the world knowing her private situation. So Rav Moshe writes in a very halachic tshuva, what do you mean embarrassed? In the days of the Gemara, days of the Beis Hamikdash, everyone knew who was a Balkari, everyone knew who was a Nida, because it was the day for everyone, for Tumah V'Tahara. Everyone had to know. There were special clothing people had when they were Tameh, whether it was a man or a woman, and when they were Tahar. So Rav Moshe writes, what's the big deal? People see that she's a Nida. That's normal. Every healthy woman is supposed to be a Nida once a month. What's the problem? It's a very halachic approach, and we strive for that. We presume that ideally, even if it's a case of a little bit of embarrassment, there's no grounds to violate the harhatos. If it's an extreme situation, sometimes you have to use your head. If there's a situation where they're in the middle of a huge ballroom, and all of a sudden the husband goes to give his wife something, and 1,000 eyes are on them, and she goes, I can't give this to my husband, that's a serious shaila. Is that considered, maybe that's super embarrassment, but chacham in a barosho, if she realizes she can't pass it to him, either he should go all the way to where she is, or she should go all the way to where he is. They shouldn't meet in the middle of the ballroom and have the shaila together. It's important to plan ahead, to think, what can I do to avoid being in a situation where I may even feel like I have to violate any of the achatos? What if a person feels like they might have to? That's Rav Moshe writes. What do you mean you have to? There's nothing embarrassing about being a nida. If it comes up, it's always important to ask the shaila in any different situation. But we try to keep this idea of Rav Moshe very much alive. It's a normal part of life. For some people, the scariest part of Hilchos Nida are vestos or vesasos. Vestos means a woman's cycle. And despite the fact that in Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara, there are a lot of different variables that can make vestos very complicated, halacha maase, the vestos are very simple. We have two types of vestos. Vestos kavua, vestos sheino kavua. Vestos kavua means that a woman, like clockwork, has a period the same exact time every single month. However, 99.9% of women don't have that. Life is too complex, maybe too stressful, maybe according to one scientist there's too much light around. Whatever reason, women don't have their periods like clockwork. Rather, every month, approximately a month after last period, they have a new period. That's what we call Vesa She'en Kavua. And we're going to center our discussion tonight about Vesa She'en Kavua, Vesa which is not precise, because most women don't have Veses Trevua. Veses Trevua is, again, a situation where a person should ask for Shaila. If there are 3 months that a woman has her period in the exact same time, the exact same day, date of the month, we make a Veses Trevua. But we presume usually most Veses are Vestos She'ena Trevua. It's somewhat related, but not precise. What's the halacha about Veses She'ena Trevua? When a woman has her Veses, her forecast for having her period this month, she and her husband are not allowed to be together intimately. They can't have tashmish during the time that her period is supposed to come, based on last month's period. Will it always come then? Of course not. But there's some sort of an odds that since she had a period this date last month, it's going to apply this month as well. And when we presume, as we're going to see in a minute, whatever the forecast is, whenever that period is supposed to come, a husband and wife are prohibited from having tashmish, from being together. What are the 3 types of vesasos that we have? The first vesas, the easiest vesas, is vesas chodesh. Vesas based upon the date of the month. Take out the charts, the handouts that are in front of you. If anyone doesn't have a chart, there's more on the table in front. On this chart, a woman's re'iyah was first on the second day of Shvat. If her re'iyah is on the second day of Shvat, she became a nida, she went to the mikvah. Now she has a re'iyah, re'iyah number 2. Her second re'iyah is on the 25th day of Shvat, Chafei Shvat. Now, as we are, we're in Chodesh Adar. When should she expect her period in Chodesh Adar? Magen Simcha, we're happy to be here, Baruch Hashem. It's now Adar. When's her period going to come? So if the most recent Riyah was on Chafei Shvat, the next Riyah, Vesta Chodesh, means that she's Choshesh for the exact same Hebrew date the next month, which means Chafei Adar. That's why if you look at Chafei Adar, Vesta Chodesh, that's the first time she's going to mark on her calendar. She's Choshesh that her Vesta is going to come. Vesta Chodesh, the 20th of Adar. Whether if it was 25th at night, then it's going to be 25th at night. If it's 25th during the day, it's going to be 25th a day. A Veses only is a 12-hour period, with 12 hours not being literal. Night or day, whether it's long or short, halachic night or halachic day, paralleling what happened the month before. She saw it during the day last month, it's going to be the 25th of Adar this month. She saw it at night last month, it's going to be the 25th of Adar at night that next month as well. That's the simplest Veses, Veses Chodesh. Very simple. You don't need to know anything. You just mark up the exact date of the previous month. The next Veses, Veses Hafraga, means the interval Veses. A little bit more complicated, but not very hard. There we take the interval, the amount of days between her last 2 periods, in order to forecast when her next period is going to happen. Let's do the math together. What were the last 2 periods we know that she had? Beis Shvat and Chafei Shvat. On the second day of Shvat was Riyah number 1. On 25th of Shvat was Riyah number 2. How many days between Beis Shvat and Chafei Shvat? Let's count. Beis Shvat, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 Shvat is 5. Then going to the next week. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Then going to the next week. No, I skipped a number there. I skipped a number? Which number did I skip? Okay, thank you. Whatever number I skipped. Again. Starting the second day of Shvat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Starting the next week is 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Then the next week is 13. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Next week is 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So her halacha, her interval is 24 days. 24 days. Now, if she's now in Adar, she wants to know when should her period come halakhically. When she choshes for a period for the next month, she counts from her most recent period, which is 25th of Shvat, 24 more days. It's important to note that 25th of Shvat counts twice. It counts as the last day of the previous cycle, and the first day of the next cycle. So now they're starting to count. 25th of Shvat is day one. One, two, three. Then on the next week, 28th of Shvat, four, five, six, going to Adar. That's not fair. Whoa, thank you. Let's see if it works out even. It works out anyway? Ignore the days. Okay, let's start again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I'm now on 7th of Adar. Zayin Adar is day number 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. 18th of Adar is going to be the Vesas Haflava. 18th of Adar is 24 days after 25th of Shvat. Even though, again, 25th of Shvat was also day number 24, becomes day 1, she counts from 25th of Shvat, 18th of Adar, that's her Vesas Haflava. So, so far we have on Vesas HaChodesh. Vesas HaFlava, whether it's day or night, whatever the first, whatever the Riyo was on 25th of Shvat, she has to transpose it to day or night for both 18th of Adar and 25th of Adar. That day or night, she's going to be prohibited from having tashmish with her husband. And then we have the third Vesas as well, Onaveinus. Onaveinus is the average Vesas. Even though we don't necessarily have it correlated with Metzias, on average, we presume that a woman has her period at once every 30 days. So we count from 25th of Shvat, 30 more days, and then you count it in, 25, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, now going to Adar, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. When does day 30 end up? On Chav Dalet Adar, the 24th day of Adar, that's the Ona Beinonis, the average Ona. Those are the three Vestos that we have. HaChodesh, which ends up for 25th of Adar, HaFlava, which is 18th of Adar, and Ona Beinonis, which is the average of 30 days, which is 24th of Adar. There is a little bit of a confusing machlokas as far as Ona Beinonis. The Shach has a discussion, and the other Akronim, if Ona Beinonis is 30 days or 31 days. Some say you should keep both, others say only keep 30 or 31. It's another shaila to ask, Halacha Maisa, whoever you ask shailas to in general, which day should be Ona Beinonis? Most post Muslims is day 30, some say 31, and some say keep day 30 and 31. But according to most posters, it's the way we did it. Haflava is just intervals, HaChodesh is the exact date of the month, and Ona Beinonis is 30 days from the most recent period. There's only one difference, according to the Shulchan Aruch, between Ona Beinonis and the other two Vestos. That is, that on Ona Beinonis, a woman has to check, do a bedikah, as she does during Zayin Nikiyim, and if she misses a bedikah during Zayin Nikiyim, if she misses a bedikah, I'm sorry, during Ona Beinonis, she's not permitted to her husband until she does a bedikah. Let's say they're on a cruise, somewhere in the middle of the Mediterranean, and she forgets to do her bedikah on Ona Beinonis, and it's 3 days later, she finally gets the bedikah and does a bedikah, she's prohibited to her husband until she does that bedikah, even if it takes 3 days, 6 days, 10 days. She's not allowed to be with her husband until she does a bedikah. Of course, it shouldn't take so long. She can use anything to do a bedikah. She can use an undershirt, something else that she has. But in theory, if she gets to do a bedikah for a few days, she's prohibited to her husband until she does a bedikah, if it's the day of the Ona Beinonis. What about Vesas HaFlava and Vesas HaChodesh? There is a machlokes altogether if she needs to do a bedikah. According to the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, on Vesas HaFlava and Vesas HaChodesh, she must do a bedikah. Just like Ona Beinonis. However, if she forgets, and that day the Vesas is over, she's off the hook. There's no need to abstain from being with her husband if she didn't do that bedikah. So again, according to the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, she has to do bedikah on Ona Beinonis, Vesas HaFlava and Vesas HaChodesh, but if she misses, then she only has to abstain from being with her husband if it's Ona Beinonis, not from the other two Vesasos. However, Rav Willig, based upon the Beis Yosef, thinks that this is not true. Rav Willig's Psach Halacha Maaseh is that the only Vesas a person needs to do bedikah on is Ona Beinonis. There's no bedikah necessary altogether, lechatchila, on Vesas HaFlava or Vesas HaChodesh. How do we pass on Halacha Maaseh? Ask wherever you normally ask shailos to. Everyone agrees that on Vesas HaFlava, on Ona Beinonis is the only time that if a person doesn't do bedikah, they have to abstain until they do it. if it's necessary to be dita altogether on Vesafaga or Vesachodesh, it's Machokas, it seems, between the Shulchan Aruch and the way he writes in Beis Yosef, Machokas Halacha Maisa. People are often confused as far as when the Vesa starts. It's possible for a woman to be a Nida, but not to mark the day of the Vesa on her calendar. For example, let's say a woman starts having a very slow flow, and unfortunately, she's wearing a white undergarment, so she has the size, a kesem, which is a little bit more than a dris, bigger than the size of a penny, like we discussed last week, on a white undergarment. Is she Tamea? Is she Anida? Yes, she's Tamea, and she has to start keeping the harchotos from then. But even though the kesem happened, did her flow start then? Was that considered the onset of her flow? Says the Shulchan Aruch in the last sif in Siman Kuf Sadihei, Ein b'chsamim mishum veses. A kesem, a little flow, even though it might make her technically a nida, does not start the veses. What's a veses? A veses means her flow began one time last month. I want to know when her flow is going to begin next time, next month. But if it's not a flow, even if definitely she's a nida, there's no need to start the veses at that time. And often it's confusing. People sometimes can have a difference of a few days. She starts spotting on Monday, but her period only starts on Thursday. When her period really starts with gusto, when she, let's say, needs to have a pad, when she really feels that her period starts, when the flow starts, that's when the period begins as far as vesasos, not when her spotting begins. Even if the spotting is going to result in her being actually Tamea, she might be a Nida, but her Vesas is not marked on the calendar until the flow actually begins. No Shir and Taras Meshpacha is complete without discussing very briefly something which is subject for its own discussion more at length. The concept of marital intimacy in itself. Perhaps the foremost halacha, which itself is only a sif katan, a very small aspect of marital intimacy, but sheds light on our hashkafa for sexuality in Judaism, is halacha that the Gemara tells us, quote in Shulchan Aruch, that a husband is not allowed to be with his wife when she's yishena, when she's sleeping. Husband is not allowed to have tashrish with his wife when she's asleep. Little halacha. What's pshat? Why is it true that husband cannot be with his wife, cannot be sexually active with his wife when she's sleeping? One of the yesodos of sexuality in Judaism is that, as opposed to the rest of the world, which sometimes permits pornography, which looks at sexuality as what's in it for me, within a bias neman b'Yisrael, sexuality is what's in it for us. It's something which is part of a couple. It's something which helps build a relationship, helps foster more of a connection, more of a loving relationship between husband and wife. If a husband has tashrich with his wife when she is sleeping, then it's when it's what's in it for me. It's centered around him. There's no us. There's no us that has no place in halacha. So we don't view sexuality as something negative. We view sexuality as something very important. But it's important in the context of a relationship, not in the context of one person taking. Each person gives in order to take. When each person gives each other pleasure, that itself creates more of a loving relationship. And it's important for each person, each member of a couple, to feel satisfied sexually. It's an essential thing for shalom bayis. Many marital problems, which come to a counselor, to a rav, as seeming to be a result of something else, are really rooted in the bedroom. Something's not taking place properly in the confines of the sexual part of marriage. It's essential in shalom bayis that takes place properly. But the difference, shabach abanu mikol amim, what makes us different than everyone else, is that we don't view it as what's in it for me, we view it as what's in it for us. It's part of a loving relationship of a couple. Which is why it's important to realize that men and women sometimes relate to situations differently. Men are able to sometimes, if a man is tense, it's sometimes easier for him to be sexually active, and it releases tension. However, for women, it's very hard when they're not in the right frame of mind, if they have other things they have to do, it's very hard for them to be able to be involved sexually. Dr. Ribner, President Joel's brother-in-law, is a sex therapist in Eretz Israel, and he often tells people that washing dishes is the best aphrodisiac. Washing dishes increases a woman's sexual desire more. What does that mean? The way Hashem made people, men and women, is that a woman finds it much harder, by and large, to be relaxed and be able to be involved in the Yanni Tashmish if she has other things on her mind that have to be done. She has laundry, she has to pick up the kids, she has to make the lunches, she has to drive carpool, she has to sweep clean the house, she has to go to work. If that's on her mind, even if it's only tomorrow, if her mind's not at rest, it's much harder for her to be sexually active. And it's important to realize, within every marriage, people have different points. Men and women, partly because of their personalities, partly because of the way they're made. Hashem made men and women differently, and it's important to acknowledge that. Yisodo yisodos, the most important part of marriage is communication. And in many situations, communication is essential. If sometimes the husband feels his needs are not being met, or wife feels his needs are not being met, it's important for them to communicate. To realize that part, obviously the sexual part of marriage is to build a relationship, and if it's instead of building it, it's making the relationship harder, the three yisodos of shalom bayis, three most important yisodos, the three most important yisodos of nida, are ask. The most important yisodos of shalom bayis are communicate. Again, it's subject for a lot more of a discussion, and we should be zochav as Hashem in the zechus of learning the Taras Mishpacha, the halachas of nida, to be more scrupulous in these halachos, and Bez Hashem have shalom in our own batim, and we zochav to see the day Bez Hashem with the ultimate bias. Binyan Adayad gives us reason to have song, have dance. Binyan Yushalayim Rekodesh b'mheira b'yameinu. Before Ma'ariv, any questions? If not, there's no more microphones. If anyone wants to ask me privately, they can. Any questions for the public forum? So we presume that touching means, let's say, he wants to scratch her back with a back scratcher. But just Hoshata, from one thing to another, that would not have been also unless Rashi would have added it. So it has to be something on the table, but not necessarily something with a lot of height. I mean, let's say placemats are okay. So who had, let's say, this MP3 player would be okay, even though it's really not noticeable. Or a pen. Take out a pen. Anything which has some sort of substance is okay, but it should be on the table in order. It doesn't have to be between them. I mean, if it's a long table and it's over there, that's probably not correct. But what if, let's say, I think if they go to a restaurant, it used to be more popular, now some restaurants still have it, they have one of those napkin holders, those metal things that have napkins from both sides. So if they decide not to use those napkin holders, and they just have it on the table, as long as it's reasonably close to them, I think that's good enough as a hacker. If they don't use it. If they use it, that's a problem. You can't use something, but that should be a hacker. And so it's always important to realize you don't need something which is strange. No one has to know what's going on. That itself is going to be able to be a hacker. Same thing. Rav Ullah, it's a commentary chashim based upon the Tashbates. Pesach Yeshiva quotes from the Tashbates, it says, Chai no seis atzmo. Very strange halacha. Chai no seis atzmo is halacha where? Because Shabbos. That in Erev, even if it's just a rabbim, it's only an issur d'rabbanan to carry a child, because Chai no seis atzmo. What does that have to do with Nida? So Rav Ullah suggests, he thinks that based on this Tashbates, Tashbates really means that with babies, small babies, is no problem of carrying, it's considered chola. Once they get a little bigger, they move themselves, that's Chai no seis atzmo. Any baby. Right, so I don't think that's a problem. If it's done with Chacham and Barosho, if it's not strictly Usur, you have to ask yourself, is that an issue of Kalos Rosh? Or nowadays, everyone is, the famous story, a person goes to a psychologist and says, I'm dreaming every night of a teepee and a wigwam. He says, of course, you're too tense. Unfortunately, that's all of us. Everyone is always tense nowadays. Everyone's always tense. So nowadays, candlelight music, that's probably just helping a person just relax. Everyone's always so jittery. Everyone has a million things to do. So it's hard to say that's considered, with one's own seichel, it's hard to say that's considered a problem. Yes. So the issur is, meaning she's allowed to drink from his left, it's only an issur of him being shaleach to her. So if he doesn't send it to her, even if she picks it up, that's okay. So that's why I mentioned before. So he made kiddush on one cup, then he poured it into other cups. Right, so he was not really shaleach anything to her. Probably should be okay, unless since in that situation maybe the fact that one is earmarked for her dafka. No, if there's a difference in size, if there's a difference in size, then it's probably not so correct because that's specifically hers. Even though he didn't send it to her, but it's right there. He's pouring hers dafka for her. If they're all the same, there's no difference between one and the other, then that's okay. But if there are different ones, one says ima on it. And that's probably not right. That's really been shaleach her own kos of yayin or grape juice. Oh, it's a good point. Thank you. I forgot to mention 2 points with harachatos. Thank you. There is the shach kotz of chumra. The shachar says there's no issue of harachatos altogether with the v'sasos. However, the shach quotes that hamachmir tovah of bracha, the person who is machmir should be machmir even with harachatos during the festival. So, how do we pass it? It's also an important shayla to ask. Strictly speaking, it's a chumrah. Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass it that way at all. But the Shach adds that person should have harachatos. There's one posik who once said, he thought maybe it's kedai to say there's a difference between a newly married couple and an oldly married couple. If they're married, if it's new, then harachatos might be harder altogether, so don't add the harachatos. But if they're married for a longer time, maybe they should have harachatos. That was not a psach, that was just a suggestion perhaps. It's important to ask whoever you normally have shaylos to, that's the important Shach. Which quotes the chumrah. So again, it's a chumrah. The other chumrah is the famous chumrah of the Arzurah. The Arzurah says that I was presuming the whole time that vestals only apply if it's night, day. Arzurah says that it's not only true for the actual night or day, even the 12 hours before, for a total of 24 hours, are considered vestals. How do we pass it in? That's also a chumrah. Many nowadays pass it in this Arzurah, but strictly speaking, Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it. That's not a chumrah which is strictly necessary, but it's important to ask whoever one asks shaylos too if it's necessary to be choshes for this Arzurah or not. Shdaya, we'll have Ma'ariv, Ezra Hashem. If anyone has any more questions, you're welcome to ask me afterwards as well.